Today's reading comes from the book of Luke. I'll be reading from chapter 19, verses 28 through to 44. After Jesus had said this, he went on ahead, going up to Jerusalem. As he approached Bethlehem and Bethany at the hill called the Mount of Olives, he sent two of his disciples, saying to them, "Go to the village ahead of you, and as you enter it, you will find a colt tied there, which no one has ever ridden. Untie it and bring it here. If anyone asks you why you are untying it, say, 'The Lord needs it.'" Those who were sent ahead went and found it just as he had told them. As they were untying the colt, the owners asked them, "Why are you untying the colt?" And they replied, "The Lord needs it." They brought it to Jesus and threw their cloaks on the colt and put Jesus on it. As they went along, people spread their cloaks on the road. When he came near the place where the road goes down the Mount of Olives, the whole crowd of disciples began joyfully to praise God in loud voices for all the miracles they had seen. "Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord. Peace in heaven and glory to the highest." Some of the Pharisees in the crowd said to Jesus, "Teacher, rebuke your disciples." "I tell you," he replied, "if they keep quiet, the stones will cry out." As he approached Jerusalem and saw the city, he wept over it and said, "If you, even you, had only known on this day what would bring you peace, but now it is hidden from your eyes. The days will come upon you when your enemies will build an embankment against you and encircle you and hem you in on every side. They will dash you to the ground, you and the children within your walls, and they will not leave one stone on another because you do not recognize the time of God's coming to you." This is the word of the Lord.
I talked about next week, next week's Easter, and I said today's, what day is it today? Palm Sunday. But are we missing something here today? Yeah, there's no palms. Robbie, it's your fault. But we also didn't do the procession, you know, with the children and putting palms down and stuff. So like, that's what we do on Palm Sunday, isn't it? That's what Palm Sunday is all about. Is that right? No. So we have a no and we have a yes. I'd love to explore that sometime about why no and why yes. Because you're both right. Because we celebrate Palm Sunday because of what happened. But did you notice something missing about the Luke reading? There was no what? No palms. There was just cloaks. So I want to talk about that a bit today. And I want to talk about, you know, we are talking about being expectant, expecting God to act, expecting God to do things. But what do we expect? What sort of things do you expect of God? I'm willing to bet some of you walked in this morning and expected to see palms everywhere. Because that's what we do on Palm Sunday. And I've never been here at a Palm Sunday before, so when I was asked, "Do we want to do palm leaves?" I'm like, "Oh, whatever. We can do palm leaves if you want or not. I'm not worried." But we all come into church expecting something, don't we? We all come expecting whatever it is. I don't know what it is for you that you expect. But I know sometimes I come to church expecting almost to be entertained. I expect to come in and have good music. Well done. I expect to come in and have great preaching. Glenn usually fulfills that. I expect to come in and have all this stuff. And what do I feel when my expectations aren't met? What do you feel if you come to church and your expectations of what church should be like aren't met? How do you cope with that? And part of the reason why I want to talk about that today is because when we look at this story, there are a million expectations going on. On all different sides. What sort of things do you think the people were expecting? When Jesus came in, what were they expecting of him? Any thoughts? All regal, which kind of was. He was on a donkey and they put the stuff out. Overthrow the Romans and restore Jerusalem to its former glory. Whatever that means. What, do you think there were any other expectations of what Jesus, what would happen that day?
Miracles?
No, he just raised Lazarus in a different gospel. It's not in Luke. But he just raised Lazarus from the dead. Anything else? There was something else over here. Same thing, miracles. Do you think they were expecting what they got? Do you think they were expecting that in a week's time, this guy, that they were waving their coats around and all sorts of stuff, would be dead? No, I don't think so. I don't think most people would have expected that. They were expecting the Messiah to overthrow the Romans and restore Israel to its restore Israel and Jerusalem to its former glory. They were expecting him to do all these amazing things. It's part of the reason why we have palm leaves. Do you know why we have palm leaves? Do you know why they had palm leaves? There's a nod. Now I'm in trouble, because if I get it wrong, I know someone knows. There's a number of reasons why. But the one that I wanted to pick up on today is, has anyone heard of the Maccabees? A couple of people? It's extra books about the time between when Israel was destroyed and when it was, anyway, Jesus' time. And there was these stories about the Maccabean guys. Judas Maccabeus was the guy I'm thinking of. So what these guys did is they started up this revolt. And they kicked out the ruling people of the time. Now, I always have trouble working out whether it was the Babylonians or the Persians or if it was the Greeks. So you can work it out. So what happened is they, or am I completely wrong? Doesn't matter. So they organised this revolt and kicked out these people. And the celebration was a palm celebration. They put down palm leaves on the road and they walked down there. So that's where the palm leaves come from. It also comes from Feast of Tabernacles and stuff like that. And the palm leaves were also a national symbol. That was on their coin. It was a symbol of God's providence, his love, his acceptance of them. It was a symbol of all these things that were so important to the Hebrew people. That's why the palm leaves. But we're not talking about palm leaves today. See, what happened this day, what happened with Luke, was he rode in on a donkey. I know for myself, when I read this, I struggle. Because I sort of wonder, why would he ride in on a donkey? You know, all the great people ride in on, I imagine, this great big black stallion, you know, this conquering victor. Because that's what it's about, isn't it? He's announcing his victory. He's announcing his kingship. He's no longer hiding. You know, up until this point, whenever Jesus did a miracle, he said, don't tell anyone, keep it secret. Don't tell anyone. And now when he comes into Jerusalem, the centre of their religion, the centre of the world for them, he's announcing, I am the one. He's announcing it by riding on a donkey. Which, for some of us, if you've heard sermons on this before, I was going to start with, what have you heard about this before? And just get it all out there. But if you've heard sermons on this before, you know, we're told about, it comes from Zechariah 9:9. You know, the prophecy that the Messiah will come riding on a donkey, the foal of a donkey. You know, and there's all these things like that. But there's also, is that what these people were expecting? They see this guy riding in on a donkey and their first thought is, Zechariah 9:9. Well, they probably didn't think it exactly like that because Numbers didn't happen then. Numbers are much later. But is that what they thought? This is the prophecy fulfilled. Maybe for some of them. Maybe for some of them they were remembering stories about kings returning on donkeys in triumph and them celebrating their kings coming to Jerusalem. And maybe they're seeing that and thinking, oh, here he is, he's the king. Maybe some of them, because this was the week of Passover, this was all these pilgrims came into Passover, and so people would, they'd be welcomed. They could be welcomed as pilgrims. And they'd go out and greet them on the road, and they'd say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Peace in heaven and glory in the highest. I've always thought, until this week, I've always thought they were saying that because that was Jesus. But I found out this week that this was a normal greeting to the people that were coming for Passover. Now, when I think about Palm Sunday and I think about this amazing spectacle, as I imagine it would have been, and I think about what it meant, I have images in my head of some TV things. I remember when I was little, the Pope came, and I remember sitting on Burbridge Road, which is the road, if you've been to Adelaide, you go out of the airport and the main road just there by the airport is Burbridge Road. It's now called Sir Donald Prattman Drive. How could I forget that one? And I remember sitting there for a couple of hours with my parents, sitting on the medium strip, waiting for the Pope to come in his Popemobile. You know, the glass top thing. And it was amazing. Oh, I saw the Pope. And there he goes. But I also think of, and there was people everywhere. We were on the medium strip because there wasn't any room. And I think of, you know, this news footage of this event that happened way before my time. But some of you may remember it. I remember seeing it in black and white at these four English guys getting off a plane. And how they were welcomed. And in Adelaide, they stood up at the thing at the town hall and all around, the streets were packed. There was hundreds of thousands of people there to greet the Beatles. I also remember in 97 and 98, end of September, well actually it was mid-October by then, there was a football team that got a ticker tape parade for winning the grand final. I won't say anything about them because, no, I won't talk about them. Because then I have to acknowledge another team that won last year, and I don't want to do that. But they had a ticker tape parade. They were given the keys to the city because they were heroes for winning a grand final. I don't know, that wouldn't happen here in Brisbane. Did they get a ticker tape parade as well? I won't talk about the fourth one then, hey? But that's the sort of stuff I imagine. You know, the ticker tape, everything going on, the people getting their phone books and cutting them up in little squares and chucking them out, you know? All this sort of stuff. This amazing party atmosphere, this celebration. And part of it was celebration because Jesus was coming into town and he was going to save us from the Roman conquerors. Or Jesus coming, he's going to do some amazing miracles. Or welcome to Passover, this amazing celebration where God delivered us from the Egyptians in some amazing ways. So which celebration are we doing? What expectations they had? What expectations, my question to you is, what expectations do you have of Jesus? What do you expect him to do in your life? How do you expect him to treat you? Do you expect him to turn up every day and change the lights green every day, all the time, so you can just get to work easy? Get rid of the traffic jams? That was a bad one this week. Do you expect him to find you a car park? Do you expect him to heal you physically? Do you expect when you come into church to be awed and inspired? Do you expect to walk out the other end of the service being different and changed because you've encountered Jesus? See, when I come to church, my expectation, I am expectant that I will meet Jesus. That I will be different. Now, how that happens is different every week. Sometimes it's a conversation that I've had with someone. Sometimes it's a song that they sung or a word in a song. Sometimes it's what Glenn has to say. It's different every week, but I come here expecting to meet God. Do you come here expecting to meet God? I hope so. And I guess that's what Glenn and I were thinking when we were talking about being expectant. We should be expecting God to act. We should be expecting God to do some things, and we should be planning for that as well. So we talked about our expectations and the expectations of other people. But what was Jesus' expectation? He was announcing himself by sitting on these donkeys, fulfilling a prophecy, showing people that I am the king, knowing that for some of them they would have been expecting him to throw out the Romans and restore Jerusalem. For some of them, they would have been expecting miracles. He would have known that. His expectation when he rode in there was that he knew that in a week's time he would be rejected and he would die and that he would raise again. He knew. Well before then, he told his disciples multiple times that this is going to happen, that it has to happen for us. For each and every person that has ever and will ever live. But there's another thing that when I read this week, I had an awful lot of trouble. Because, you know, they've got the Pharisees and how they told him. There's all sorts of things going on around that, you know, where the Pharisees just being nice and saying, keep hiding. You know, you don't want to draw attention to yourself. You're going to Jerusalem. They'll kill you. Or were they being mean and saying, stop putting yourself up there on a pedestal and come down like everyone else? What was Jesus' expectation in this? He knew his time was right. He had all of that going on in the back of his mind about what was to come. As much as he might have enjoyed the people worshipping God at that moment, he still would have had that playing in the back of his mind. Then it says this. As he approached Jerusalem and saw the city. Now I want to give you a bit of a picture. When you come from that direction where they're coming, up the Mount of Olives, then you come up the hill. Apparently it's pretty steep and it's a long way up. Hard walk. You come up the hill and then all of a sudden you come up on the top of the Mount of Olives and you look down over the city of Jerusalem. So at that moment that he first, you know, when you come around a corner and you get the first glimpse of what you're looking for, you know, that moment of, I'm there. So that moment right now that Jesus is living in. So as he approached Jerusalem and saw the city, he wept over it. I imagine he was weeping for a number of reasons. One is because of, I imagine, this is me, of what's to come. He knows the pain and torment that's coming. But he tells you another reason. If you, even you, had only known on this day what would bring you peace, but now it is hidden from your eyes. The days will come upon you when your enemies will build an embankment against you and encircle you and hem you in on every side. They will dash you to the ground, you and the children within your walls. They will not leave one stone on another because you did not recognize the time of God's coming to you. I wanted to change what I'm talking about now to being less about what you expect of church, of God, of everything else, to asking you, what does God expect of you? See, God had expectations of Israel. He had expectations of what they would do for the world around them. And they didn't live up to them. That is what this grief is about. He knows this city that he's loved and poured so much time and effort and love and energy into. This city that he brought out of nothing. This nation that were basically a bunch of vagabonds. He turned into an amazing nation that conquered the world around him. Brought him out of Egypt in a way that showed his glory. These people that had all these reminders of what God has done in their lives lost their way. So you can imagine, he comes over this hill and he sees this city and he's like, oh no, this city that I love so much, this place that I love so much is ruined. It's falling apart, has lost its way. I can't look on it anymore. If you're anything like me, then there are times when you lose your way. When you, as God's holy city, when you, as God's great people, lose your way, make mistakes, let God down, whatever it is, you fill in the blank. When God looks at you, what does he see? Does he weep over you? Does he weep over the way that you've let him down and let others down? I was reminded of this last night. Had presentation night last night for baseball. And so the coach got us all up the front because we won the grand final on Monday, which is great. I didn't really want to do that, but I have to tell you that. So the coach invited us all up. And you know, and as he's inviting each person up the front, he's doing a bit of spiel about each one of us. And he says, this guy's from Vancouver, so he's got a cool accent, which I will not try to imitate. But he said, this guy's come up from South Australia. And you know, he's just fitted into the team and all sorts of stuff, right? All this really nice stuff about me. And then he said, this guy gave us a bit of a problem this year because we had to watch our language in the dugout. Because I sent out this email and these text messages to all these guys and said, if you can help us out on Sundays, because the real teams play on Sundays. You know, we're just masters. I'm oldie. Makes me feel really old. And so we sent out an email asking if anyone could help out on Sundays. And I said, look, sorry, I can't. And he said, I really shouldn't have, but I did ask what he does. And he said, and then Brett said, oh, he's a minister in the church. And he said, oh, okay. And that was nice. So in front of the whole club, I'm out, you know. And I like to keep a low profile, you know. Let people know that I'm a Christian by my actions, you know, all of that nice stuff. And kind of crawl into my hole and don't tell people that I'm a Christian unless they ask, you know, what do you do? Well, I'm a minister in a church. Oh, where's the church? Oh, you know, the Chapel Hill, you know, the chapel on the hill. So I will do that, but I'm not going to go out of my way to tell people generally. So last night, I'm standing up there and this guy's saying about what I do for a job, and I'm thinking, I've let all these people down. And there's also another thing that runs through my head is, God, what have you got in plan for me with these guys in the future? Why have you done this to me? Not like a, why have you done this to me, but a, why have you done this? What's going on here? So, and I know it seems minor and little, but it was one of those moments that I felt like I really let him down. And he chose to fix that. So where do you let God down? Where are those moments when you know that you haven't quite done the right thing? when you know you've chosen something else instead of God. When you know that you've misrepresented God in some way, to yourself or to others. And just imagine what God's reaction is. I imagine for my life, generally, his reaction would be very similar to what Jesus was over Jerusalem. Not so much a pronouncement of doom and gloom and horrible stuff that's going to happen in the future, but just this, I pour so much into you and you keep letting me down. I want you to spend some time this week thinking about that. Because this week, when I was at school, in Catholic schools, this week was always about, it was called Holy Week. And it was about preparing for Easter. You know, we are in Advent. It is about preparing, not Advent, Lent. Thank you. I'm glad no one said anything, you know. We're in Lent, a time of preparing. This week especially is a time to prepare for Easter. I'm not saying to sit there and wallow in your own self-pity and say, oh, I'm so horrible. How could I possibly call myself a Christian because I do all these things wrong? But what I want you to do is acknowledge all of that stuff. Come to God with it and say, look, I'm sorry. I've let you down so much. And at the same time, when you prepare for Friday and Sunday, coming to that, those services with a sense of relief, a sense of, God, now I understand what you've done. Now I truly understand what you gave up, what you've taken on for me. In a way of preparing for Easter, examine yourself. Examine yourself from God's eyes. That yes, you've fallen short, that you've made mistakes, that you've let him down. But at the same time, that he sees you as an immensely valuable, an important person. That he's invested countless hours and years into you. To show you love and acceptance and peace. Let that be your preparation for Easter. I guess so that all your expectations may be fulfilled next weekend. And expect God to come. Will you please pray with me? God, I want to thank you for what this week means. Thank you for the opportunity that we have of re-examining ourselves through your eyes. Hearing that you weep over us, that you cry for us. That you feel so much pain for us. Give us a glimpse of how that feels for you. Help us to understand more. And as a result of that, help us to understand what you have done to fix that, to alleviate that. How far, how much you have healed us. Help us to understand the life that you give that we don't deserve. Lord, I want to thank you for this. Amen.